This is Mary Jo McCurley at University Park United Methodist Church here in Dallas, Texas, and we are bringing you the series, The Wisdom of the Sages. Today, we are so excited to bring you the children's minister at University Park, Jennifer Scott. Welcome, Jennifer.
Thank you, Mary Jo.
Jennifer, tell us, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Born in Tulsa, grew up a little bit rural until my parents divorced when I was about 5 or 6 years of age, and came into the South Tulsa area known as Jenx, Oklahoma. J-E-N-K-S. There was a joke a time or two in
I
my
bet.
Childhood. Yes. So basically, South Tulsa, and then graduated from Jenx High School and moved on to Oklahoma State from there.
Just out of curiosity, what was your mascot at Jenx?
Jenx Trojans, which was also a lot of fun. So, yes. And we were a big football powerhouse and still are to this day. So.
And did you grow up a Methodist?
Yes. I used to say half Methodist, half Presbyterian. My uncle, my mom's brother, was a Presbyterian pastor, and so I was baptized by him in the Presbyterian church. And when my parents divorced, my mom basically was looking for the great singles group in town. And so that was at Asbury United Methodist in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And she, I think, told me the other day, she's been there about 40 or 41 years now, I think. So that was a thriving singles ministry, and so that's where we attended when I was, you know, probably, I would say 7 or 8 is when we came to the Tulsa immediate area, so probably around then. And then I was confirmed in the United Methodist Church at age 12, I believe, 6th grade, 1985. And so I participated in confirmation was a wonderful experience. I remember back in the day, it was we rode a bus to the church after school. It was a huge confirmation class, and really active in the church as a young child and early teens. But I didn't find my happy place there because, believe it or not, I was quiet and shy, and yes, I know this is shocking, and I needed kind of a more intimate, smaller group. And so I believe it was not probably long after my confirmation that I started with my grandparents. And actually, as a young child, they were charter members of their Presbyterian church. And so I remember going to the activity center where they met on Sundays, and then they moved up to the, you know, the local school, and then eventually built their own building. And so that kind of was always in the periphery of my childhood faith. And then I started as a teenager after confirmation. I was looking for that youth group where I fit in a little bit better, where I was known a little bit more. And so that's kind of where my foundational, I would say, ministry or call to ministry really started as a teenager, working, volunteering, being a part of that family.
So you were predestined to be a Methodist.
It is interesting because, yes, when I was, you know, I continued through high school to participate in that church family, always felt at home, but there was always this draw to John Wesley and what, I mean, honestly, probably what I studied in confirmation. Went to Oklahoma State. My dream as, you know, a high schooler and going into college, I fell in love with my high school government class. And so I was, and Mrs. Brzezinski, who just made it all come alive, and back in the day of having the weekly Newsweek magazine in our hands, and we would study, mm-hmm. and we would highlight, and we would know what was going on in the world and current events and government, and she just made it so alive for me that that's what I was going to do. And I had always had this draw to loving kids, but I don't think I could have really communicated why that was until I felt called to ministry, which happened in my junior year of college.
Well, where did you go to college?
Oklahoma State in Stillwater. We bleed orange, bright orange. I'm always teasing my friends around here. Wearing bright orange today, actually.
But, yes, you are. And on Pentecost as well.
I was a little better this year. I had a little more red in my shirt this year than last year. But yes, we are a little bit allergic to red in our house. So.
Well, I remember meeting you your first day. It was Pentecost.
Yes.
And you were in orange. I remember thinking, I wonder if she realizes that's orange.
Right, or is she colorblind?
That's right.
Of some sort. You know, what is funny is a side note, First United Methodist Church in Stillwater, Oklahoma, if you will look at their website or their cross and flame, it is always orange because of Oklahoma State. And also at the Wesley Foundation on the campus of Oklahoma State, their cross and flame on the building is bright orange. So I come by it naturally or something like that.
So what was your major in college?
So it was political science, and I took education classes, and I really enjoyed, you know, all of my public law classes and political science, and I'm a little bit of a disappointment these days. Probably people would be appalled that I had a political science degree because of how my life kind of transformed, but I was visiting a friend in Oklahoma City my junior year of college, April of 94, and I tell kids this all the time. I don't know how to say it other than God zapped me. It was not a verbal call, but it was a tug on my heart, and it was Confirmation Sunday at Church of the Servant in Oklahoma City, which is a United Methodist Church. So because I was in the United Methodist Church on that particular day, and it was confirmation, it's always kind of had a special place in my heart. But like I said, John Wesley just had that tug. When I felt that call and I didn't know who else to speak to, I went to Wesley Foundation in Stillwater, Oklahoma, and talked with the campus pastor there, and he calmed some fears for a short term anyway. But children had always been a part of me. And looking back on my time with my grandparents in the Presbyterian Church, I was doing vacation Bible school as a young child, visiting their church in the school. We did vacation Bible school. And then a few more years, I was volunteering in the nursery and volunteering with vacation Bible school. I vividly remember volunteering with vacation Bible school. So it's a really important part of my calling. When I went to visit Rusty Williams, the pastor at the Wesley Foundation in college, after I'd had this call moment, he explained to me at that time it was the ordained ministry of the elder, and it was diaconal ministry, which was a lay ministry. I knew from the beginning that if I was being called to ministry, it was a specialized ministry. It was with kids. It was not preaching from the pulpit every Sunday. So I left that place that day in April of 94, and I did not look back. I did not tell a soul about that experience for months until I was home with my mom late that summer, just prior to my senior year of college. And I told her my experience, and she was not the least bit surprised. And she said, I can totally see it, and I wondered when you'd figure this out. And so I just needed her affirmation. So finished my senior year with my political science degree because I knew I would be going to seminary.
Well, and I think your daughter seems to have that same passion for children.
She does. Abby loves the kids. If she can be there volunteering and helping, she is right there in the middle of it. So she's got a joyful heart for kids, for sure.
Where did you go to seminary?
So I, my aunt lives here locally, actually in Flower Mound, and I didn't even visit any other seminaries other than Perkins because I knew that I could get, I had the United Methodist, my membership was still held in the United Methodist Church, even though I had been attending with my grandparents at the Presbyterian Church. And so I went to Perkins, I visited, I knew that I had a place to stay in Flower Mound with my aunt who had a house to herself. And so I came here to Perkins about 25 years ago, just a couple of miles from here. So full circle moment. I started in 1995, and at that point, my degree program was Master of Religious Education, MRE. It's called, I believe it's Master of Arts and Religion now. But at some point, I guess right in the middle of my degree time at Perkins is when the Order of Deacon was established. And so it was no longer, I was no longer pursuing that lay ministry, but I was able to pursue that ordination, which then resulted in years and years of the candidacy process, which we know as is a long process, but you have to really want to be a minister.
Yeah.
So they have shortened it a little bit. Used to be called the probationary period. That time once you're commissioned in ordained ministry, you have the commissioning and then you're ordained. That those two different time frames, and it used to be called probationary period. And then it went to provisionary period, and I can't remember what it's called now. But
how many years is that?
So it was 3 years for me, and now it's two, I believe. I don't think they've shortened it again, but yes. So it's a little bit shorter, but I mean, going as fast as I could with seminary until ordination was about 8 or 9 years. So
I feel your pain.
Yes, you do. So, yeah.
So tell us about your family.
So my family, I once I graduated Perkins in 1997, I wanted to go back home to Oklahoma. My first church was in Perry, Oklahoma, which is about an hour north of Oklahoma City. It's 25 minutes from Stillwater. And I was minister of Christian education there, which entailed, it was a very small church, so I did children and youth ministry. And I had wonderful lay people. Fifth and sixth grade, my favorite fifth and sixth grade Sunday school teacher was Ann Scott, and she had done this forever and ever and ever. And her husband, Charlie, was so faithful on every committee back in the day of that church, and just wonderful people. And they had told me about their two sons. One lived in Arkansas, one lived in California. Anyway, I eventually got to meet their cute little dark-headed Toby, super quiet, standing in my office door. I can still see it in his white starched long sleeve shirt. And he was really involved in his church in Arkansas, in Rogers, Arkansas. And so that was kind of the commonality. They never tried to get, you know, set us up or anything like that. So, and he is very quiet and shy, as is our son, which we'll talk about in a minute. But, and so it just always kind of worked. But we, our commonality was our faith and loving being in the church. Eventually, we got that cute boy to move from Arkansas to Oklahoma for work, and kind of the rest is history. We were married in April of 2000, so we don't have to do the math. We know in our anniversary what number of years we've been married.
And so first you had your son?
Yes. So we went from Perry, Oklahoma. We went to Oklahoma City. I was at Wesley United Methodist Church there. Beautiful Gothic cathedral style sanctuary right there near Oklahoma City University. So I was a minister of children and youth there as well. I was there for about 4 years, and Toby worked in logistics and warehousing there in Oklahoma City, a great job. He then, and so at that time I'm working through my candidacy process still, and I was commissioned in 2001 and then ordained in 2004. And so when I was about to be ordained, I was doing all of my interviews and all of my paperwork. Then Toby got a promotion to Fort Worth with his company. And so just prior to my ordination, when I'm working through all of those difficult papers and interviews and everything, and then he was about to leave, I experienced a medical emergency with an ectopic pregnancy with the loss of our first child, and also loss of dreams of probably having children. So really hard time there from, you know, that January to April when we were gonna be able to be together, or actually more May. So we had several months apart then. I feel like we've always been in training. We're living in different places, but so anyway, by the time I was ordained in 2004 in the Oklahoma Conference. I transferred immediately into the North Texas Conference and started my work at Coppell First United Methodist, and that's where both of my babies born and learned to crawl and walk in those hallways. And at Coppell, I was just doing children's ministry. I knew at that point that we were trying, you know, to have a family, and I didn't think I could do youth ministry anymore and be away from my kid as much. So Charlie came around, little miracle Charlie came in February of 2005, Super Bowl Sunday. Took him a few days to get here. Very stubborn, didn't want to come. And then I had more medical trauma after that, where I ended up in ICU with blood clots and, you know, felt like I was going to orphan my child after he was born. Mm. So I have some trauma related to having children. And so because of that, then we learned that I had a clotting disorder and then had to be on medication for when Abby was born. Had another loss in between the two kids. And then Abby was born in 2008. And before she was born, her 26-week ultrasound, then we knew she had a short femur. And that's about all we learned, because it was so rare. So 1 in 150,000 births. So her femur was about half the length of the other is what was showing up. Not all families know ahead of time before their child is born, but because they measured both sides of the I mean both legs, then we did know. So a little fireball redhead Abby came in April of 2008, and we went on a quest from locally to around the United States for the best treatment for her. So she's had a lot of reconstruction surgeries on her leg and limb lengthening surgeries, which is a tough battle. So we were in Florida for 7 years, and I was actually in an extension ministry setting. So I worked more as almost like a chaplain function instead of a local church for those 7 years while we were in Florida.
And how many surgeries has Abby had?
She has had 9 surgeries. Three is what I would say are really significant surgeries. I mean, every surgery is significant, but her biggest one was when she was 2 years of age, and we put her under anesthesia for about 12 hours. And was for hip and knee reconstruction, because of her deformity, you can't lengthen a short leg until you have good solid joints. And so the hip and the knee needed a lot of work prior to that first lengthening. So she did really well with that. That was by far the most traumatic and difficult day of our lives as parents. And she was in a spica cast for 6 weeks, and then we just did therapy after that. She did great. She got really good hip reconstruction surgery, and then did her first lengthening when she was almost 4 years of age. At that point, Toby was working in Dallas. I had the two kids in Florida. That's where we had decided to do our treatment. And so we were there for about 5 months and then came back. So each time you do a lengthening, it's a 4 to 6 month experience, and it's painful, it's agony, it's amazing, it's miraculous, it's heartbreaking, it's all of that. So we did that when she was almost 4, and I fell in love with South Florida. So that's how we ended up going back. We came home to Toby and then said, guess what? The surgeon called and offered me. So I worked at her surgeon's office, but worked with families like ours from every state in about 90 countries. Worked with families about what it means to go through these surgeries, and realistically, and helping them with the day-to-day. Surgeons fix the bones, and we fix the family, or try.
Wow.
So
does she have any more surgeries in her future?
She does. She's got about one more lengthening. I mean, we will do one more lengthening surgery and be finished. Modern science miracles are that we've been able to do a couple surgeries on the good leg, and that is to completely stop the growth in the good leg so that the shorter leg can catch up a little bit for a few years. Stopping growth is a much easier process than lengthening a short femur. And so we've actually been 8 years since her second lengthening surgery, which is unheard of and amazing, because we've caught up so much. So she's got about one more lengthening of about 2 inches that we'll need to get. And that's 2 to 3 inches is normally what you get. So it's a lot. It's a lot for the family. It's a lot of physical pain for her. It's a lot of sacrifice, emotionally, mentally, physically, spiritually, for the whole family. So that was our life prior to coming here. We came back to Oklahoma just prior to the pandemic. We were ready to be back with family, and We had raised, you know, our babies until they were 6th and 9th grade in Florida, away from family, and that's how we came back to be close to family, and so that's how we ended up Southern Oklahoma. I didn't ever find my full-time church ministry there, and so in about a year, a little over a year ago, I saw University Park was looking, and I was ready to go be where I needed to be in ministry. So,
well, we're glad you did.
Thank you. And I've known Joe Stovall forever, and so we had a great conversation and a really neat interview process. And so, yep, it's been a year, almost exactly.
And in that year, well, your son's graduating from high school.
High school, he did,
right?
Yes, about 2 weeks ago.
He just did.
Yes.
And he's off to college.
Soon, yes, in a few months.
And your husband will be moving to be with
Thank
you.
Thank goodness, yes. Uh-huh. We are trying desperately to get the family of four in one, on this side of the Red River all together for a few months. So, yes, Charlie and Toby stayed behind for this year so that Charlie could graduate high school. And he will go to Oklahoma State in the fall. He bleeds orange as well since he was young. He didn't have a choice. Indoctrinated young. But he will pursue sports media there, and he's excited, and we're really excited for him and his growth. Sister's not excited for him to go to college and leave her. But we're really proud of him and excited for all that is in store for him. And both of my kids, I'm really, really thankful. Love church. They love their faith. It's important to them. They want to be in church. They want to watch church when they can't be in the facility, and just really pretty good people, pretty special people. I attribute a lot of that to Toby's really strong faith and that being kind of our foundation as we met each other.
So. Who would you say the people are that have influenced you?
I would say really important to me, and I think when I got to University Park, it really helped me understand to see the generations that are here, the blessing of having children with their grandparents here. That has taken me back to this is why, you know, I've had this heart for intergenerational ministry for so long, but until I came to this place and saw it in action, it's like, that is my foundation. I grew up being in church with my grandparents and that being important. And so to have the blessing of the teeny babies, and then we have the 80s or 90s even year old folks who were born and raised in this church, baptized in this church as infants, still here, but also having families and grandchildren and everybody here. That really, I believe, my grandparents, my relationship with them and my experience with them in church is foundational. That, I feel like at each church that I've been a part of, I always have that mentor woman or two that have really have sustained me, have held me up in the tough days. And oftentimes, you know, I had Granny Jeannie in my first church. Her name's Jeannie Hannah, and she died, I think, about 2 or 3 years ago now. But she was my saint. She wrote me notes and prayed for me since the first time I interviewed there. Long before I interviewed, like 3 or 4 months before I finished seminary with that church, and so I knew I was going there for a while. But she would write me weekly notes and Joe Johnson was the church secretary there, and I just feel like, and then at Wesley in Oklahoma City, it was Martha Butler, and oh goodness, I've just forgotten her name, oh my other friend, but I feel like there are pillars in every church, particularly oftentimes older men or women who have seen a lot, been through a lot. The whole Coppell Church literally has prayed for our family since all of my drama with Charlie. I showed up there, oh by the way, you know, I showed up to work there in 2004 and said, oh, we're gonna have a little surprise in 2005. So that church has lifted us, and our prayer group, the Soul Sisters there, Debbie Schaefer, and all of our friends who've been literally meeting every Tuesday for 20 years or so. Just I feel like each church has has that group that is just sustained me personally before I got married, me and Toby together, our family, and then now we are here at University Park, and I have so many neat memories and full circle moments of being at University Park that I hope to share in a few weeks when I'm not going to preach. I'm going to stand and give the message. So I'll share more of those fun memories. But I'm just really grateful for people that have really lived well, faithful lives and know the difficulties of hard work and living a life of faith and going through challenges, life challenges. They're in every church family, and I feel like I really have come to count on them. So.
What do you see the future of University Park?
I think the immediate future is we are continuing to celebrate being that one family, that intergenerational family. I'm really excited about our generation to generation Sunday schools that we're having, and just kind of communicating the real gift that we have in our church family that not all churches have. We have such rich history and tradition and families that have been here. I think we're going to continue to connect in that. And then it's really important to me that our kids are able to be next to and among the grandparent types that are not in their home, because you know, if we don't embrace what we have right now, the history of University Park, it's so crucial that we pass that on. Now, does University Park look like it looks, you know, 20 or 30 years from now? Absolutely not. We're going to lose, you know, the pillars of our church family. So we have a new opportunity, I feel like, for kids and for youth to, you know, it's really, people are drawn to feeling where they belong and feel important. Now, what that looks like as these kids experience that with their pseudo grandparents or mentors or Sunday school leaders or VBS leaders, how they take that into the future of University Park, I have no idea. I just know that we all have this really neat, special thing right now with people who have such love for their church and pouring it in to kids and what the kids, you know, people, and we talk about this all the time, kids and teenagers and young adults will give to ministries that they feel really make a difference in the world. They want to make a difference in the world. They want to make an impact. So as we continue to really hone in on our mission ministry team and our four core missions, I feel like we have a real opportunity to involve more and more of our young people in what that looks like, because it will, University Park will definitely be very different in a couple of decades. But what's important right now is to just to remind kids and teenagers that they are very much a part of our church family, this place that we call home, and really finding ways that they can find their niche here to make a difference, because that really is making a difference with the gospel of Jesus Christ and sharing that love for the transformation of the world. I mean, that's what we're called to do. So,
well, you've already made a great impact on us in the 1 year you've been here, and we're so grateful that you are. Thank you so much, Jennifer, for sharing with us a little bit about who you are today.
You're welcome.
And to our listeners, we appreciate you listening to our podcast and hope you will be with us next week. May God be with each and every one of you until we meet again.